When I was there before, they entertained me in a most elegant and obliging manner, regaling me from house to house with emulation. Now they treated me with the utmost contempt, saying they did it to revenge what I made their relations suffer. As I saw the thing went so far, and that notwithstanding all my care and endeavors to please her, I had not been able to succeed, I resolved to come to an explanation with her. I told her that there was a current report that I treated her ill, though I made it my study to give her every mark of my esteem. If the report were true, I desired her to allow me to remove from her, for that I would not choose to stay to give her pain, but only with a quite contrary view. She answered very coldly, I might do what I would, for she had not spoken about it, but was resolved to live apart from me. This was fairly giving me my discharge, and I thought of taking my measures privately to retire. As I had not, since my widowhood, made any visits, but such as were of pure necessity or charity, there were found too many discontented spirits, who made a party with her against me. The Lord required of me an inviolable secrecy of all my pains, both exterior and interior. There is nothing which makes nature die so much as to find neither support nor consolation. In short, I saw myself obliged to go out in the middle of winter with my children and my daughter's nurse. At that time, there was no house empty in the town, so the Benedictines offered me an apartment in theirs. I was now in a great strait, on one side fearing lest I was shunning the cross, on the other side thinking it unreasonable to impose my stay on one to whom it was only painful. Besides what I have related of her behavior, which still continued, when I went into the country to take a little repose, she complained that I left her alone. If I desired her to come thither, she would not. If I said, I dare not ask her to come, for fear of incommoding her by changing her bed, she replied, it was only an excuse, because I would not have her go, and that I only went to be away from her. When I heard that she was displeased at my being in the country, I returned to the town. Then she could not bear to speak to me or to see me. I accosted her without appearing to notice how she received it. Instead of making me any answer, she turned her head another way. I often sent her my coach, desiring her to come and spend a day in the country. She sent it back empty without any answer. If I passed some days there without sending it, she complained aloud. In short, all I did to please her soured her, God so permitting it. She had in the main a good heart, but was troubled with an uneasy temper, and I do not fail to think myself under much obligation to her. Being with her on Christmas Day, I said to her with much affection, My mother, on this day was the King of Peace born, to bring it to us. I beg peace of you in his name. I think that touched her, though she would not let it appear. The ecclesiastic whom I had met with at home, far from strengthening and comforting me, did nothing but weaken and afflict me, telling me that I ought not to suffer certain things. I had not credit enough to discharge any domestic, however defective or culpable. As soon as any of them were warned to go away, she sided with them, and all her friends interfered. As I was ready to go off, one of my mother-in-law's friends, a man of worth, who had always an esteem for me, without daring to show it, having heard it, was much afraid lest I should leave the town, for the removal of my alms, he thought, would be a loss to the country. He resolved to speak to my mother-in-law in the softest manner he could, for he knew her. After he had spoken to her, she said that she would not put me away, but if I went, she would not hinder me. After this, he came to see me and desired me to go and make an excuse to her in order to content her. I told him I should be willing to make 100, although I did not know about what, that I did it continually about everything, which made her uneasy. But that was not now the matter, for I made no complaint of her, but thought it not proper for me to continue with her to give her pain, that it was but just that I should contribute to her ease. However, he went with me into her room. Then I told her that I begged her pardon, if ever I had displeased her in anything, that it had never been my intention to do it, that I desired her before this gentleman who was her friend to tell me wherein I had given her any offense. Here, God permitted, she made a declaration of the truth in his presence. She said, she was not a person to suffer herself to be offended, that she had no other complaint against me, but that I did not love her, and that I wished her dead. I answered her that these thoughts were far from my heart, so far from it that I should be glad, at my best care and attendance on her, to prolong her days, that my affection was real, but that she never would be persuaded to believe it. Whatever testimonies I could give, so long as she hearkened to people who spoke to her against me, that she had with her a maid who, far from showing me any respect, treated me ill, so far as to push me when she wanted to pass by. She had done it at church, making me give way to her with as much violence as contempt, several times, also in my room grating me with her words, that I had never complained of it, because such a temper might one day give her trouble. She took the girl's part. Nevertheless, we embraced, and it was left so. Soon after, when I was in the country, this maid, having me no more to vent her chagrins on, behaved in such a manner to my mother-in-law that she could not bear it. She immediately put her out of doors. I must say here, on my mother-in-law's behalf, that she had both sense and virtue, and except certain faults, which persons who do not practice prayer are liable to, she had good qualities. Perhaps I caused crosses to her without intending it, and she to me without knowing it. I hope what I write will not be seen by any who may be offended with it, or who may not be in a condition to see these matters in God. That gentleman who had used me so ill for breaking off my acquaintance with him, among his penitents had one who, for affairs which befell her husband, was obliged to quit the country. He himself was accused of the same things which he had so liberally and unjustly accused me, and even things much worse, and with more noise and outcry. Though I well knew all this, God granted me the favor never to make his downfall the subject of my discourse. On the contrary, when any spoke to me of it, I pitied him, and said what I could in mitigation of his case. And God governed my heart so well that it never offered to go into any vain joy at seeing him overtaken and oppressed with those kind of evils which he had been so assiduous in endeavoring to bring upon me. Though I knew that my mother-in-law was informed of it all, I never spoke to her about it, or about the sad confusions he had caused in a certain family. Chapter 26. One day during my husband's lifetime, laden with sorrow, not knowing what to do, I wished to speak to a person of distinction and merit who came often into the country. I wrote to request an opportunity with him for what I wanted his instruction and advice. But soon after I felt remorse for it, this voice spoke in my heart. What, dost thou seek for ease and to shake off my yoke? Hereupon I instantly sent a note again to desire him to excuse me, adding that what I had written was only from self-love, not necessity, that as he knew what it was to be faithful to God, I hoped he would not disapprove my acting with this Christian simplicity. Yet he resented it, which surprised me much, as I had conceived a high idea of his virtue. Virtues he had, but such as are full of the life and activities of nature, and unacquainted with the paths of mortification and death. Thou, O my God, hast been my conductor even in these paths, as with admiration I have discovered since they are past. Blessed be thy name forever. I am obliged to bear this testimony to thy goodness. Before I continue my narration, I must add one remark, which the Lord gave me to make upon the way by which he, in his goodness, was pleased to conduct me, which is that this obscure path is the surest to mortify the soul, as it leaves it not any prop to lean upon for support. Though it has no application to any particular state of Jesus Christ, yet, at its coming out, it finds itself clothed with all his dispositions. The impure and selfish soul is hereby purified as gold in the furnace, full of its own judgment and its own will before, but now obeys like a child and finds no other will in itself. Before it would have contested for a trifle, now it yields at once, not with reluctance and pain by way of practicing virtue, but as it were naturally. Its own vices are vanished. This creature, so vain before, now loves nothing but poverty, littleness, and humiliation. Before, it preferred itself above everybody, now everybody above itself, having a boundless charity for its neighbor, to bear with his faults and weaknesses, in order to win him by love, which before it could not do but with very great constraint. The rage of the wolf is changed to the meekness of the lamb. During all the time of my experiencing my miseries and my deep trials, I went after no fine sights or recreations. I wanted to see and know nothing but Jesus Christ. My closet was my only diversion. Even when the Queen was near me, whom I had never seen, and whom I had desire enough to see, I had only to open my eyes and look out to see her, yet did not do it. I had been fond of hearing others sing, yet I was once 4 days with no one who passed for the finest voice in the world, without ever desiring her to sing, which surprised her, because she was not ignorant, that knowing her name, I must know the charming excellence of her voice. However, I committed some infidelities in inquiring what others said of me by way of blame. I met with one who told me everything. Though I showed nothing of it, it served only to mortify me. I saw I was yet too much alive to self. I shall never be able to express the number of my miseries. They are so vastly surmounted by the favors of God, and so swallowed up in these that I can see them no more. One of the things which gave me most pain in the 7 years I have spoken of, especially the last five, was so strange a folly of my imagination that it gave me no rest. My senses bore it company. I could no more shut my eyes at church. Thus, having all the gates and avenues open, I was like a vineyard exposed, because the hedges which the father of the family had planted were torn away. I saw every one that came and went, and everything that passed in the church, for the same force which had drawn me inward to recollection seemed to push me outward to dissipation. Laden with miseries, weighed down with oppressions, and crushed under continual crosses, I thought of nothing but ending my days thus. There remained in me not the least hope of ever emerging. Notwithstanding, I thought I had lost grace forever, and the salvation which it merits for us. I longed at least to do what I could for God, though I feared I should never love Him. Seeing the happy state from whence I had fallen, I wished in gratitude to serve Him, though I looked on myself as a victim doomed to destruction. Sometimes the view of that happy period caused secret desires to spring up in my heart, of recovering it again. I was instantly rejected and thrown back into the depths of the abyss. I judged myself to be in a state which was due to unfaithful souls. I seemed, my God, as if I was forever cast off from thy regard and from that of all creatures. By degrees my state ceased to be painful. I became even insensible to it, and my insensibility seemed like the final hardening of my reprobation. My coldness appeared to me a mortal coldness. It was truly so, O my God, since I thus died to self, in order to live wholly in Thee and in Thy precious love. To resume my history, a servant of mine wanted to become a Barnabite. I wrote about it to Father de la Motte. He answered me that I must address Father Lacombe, who was then the superior of the Barnabites of Tonon. That obliged me to write to him. I had always preserved secret respect and esteem for him as one under grace. I was glad of this opportunity of recommending myself to his prayers. I wrote to him about my fall from the grace of God, that I had requited his favors with the blackest ingratitude, that I was miserable and a subject worthy of compassion, and far from having advanced toward God, I was becoming entirely alienated from him. He answered in such a manner as if he had known by a supernatural light the frightful description I had given of myself. In the midst of my miseries, Geneva came into my mind a singular manner which caused me many fears. What, said I, to complete my reprobation, shall I go to such an excess of impiety as to quit the faith through apostasy? The inhabitants of Geneva being generally Protestant Calvinists, am I then about quitting that church for which I would give 1,000 lives? Or shall I ever depart from that faith which I would even wish to seal with my blood? I had such a distrust of myself that I dared hope for nothing, but had 1,000 reasons for fear. Nevertheless, the letter which I had received from Father Lacombe, in which he wrote me an account of his present disposition, somewhat similar to mine, had such an effect as to restore peace and calmness to my mind. I felt myself inwardly united to him as to a person of great fidelity to the grace of God. Afterward, a woman appeared to me in a dream to be come down from heaven to tell me that God demanded me at Geneva. About 8 or 10 days before Magdalene's Day, 1680, it came into my mind to write to Father Lacombe and to request him, if he received my letter before that day, to pray particularly for me. It was so ordered, contrary even to my expectations, that he received my letter on St. Magdalene's Eve, and when praying for me the next day, it was said to him thrice over with much power, "Ye shall both dwell in one and the same place." He was very much surprised, as he never had received interior words before. "I believe, O my God, that that has been much more verified, both in our inward sense and experience, and in the same crucifying events which have befallen us, pretty much alike, and in thyself, who art our dwelling, than in any temporal abode." Chapter 27. On that happy Magdalene's Day, my soul was perfectly delivered from all its pains. It had already begun since the receipt of the first letter from Father Lacombe to recover a new life. It was then only like that of a dead person raised, though not yet unbound from grave cloths. On this day I was, as it were, in perfect life and set wholly at liberty. I found myself as much raised above nature as before I had been depressed under its burden. I was inexpressibly overjoyed to find him, whom I thought I had lost forever, return to me again with unspeakable magnificence and purity. It was then, O God, that I found again in thee, with new advantages, in an ineffable manner, all I had been deprived of. The peace I now possessed was all holy, heavenly, and inexpressible. All I had enjoyed before was only a peace, a gift of God, but now I received and possessed the God of peace. Yet the remembrance of my past misery still brought a fear upon me, lest nature should find means to take to itself any part therein. As soon as it wanted to see or taste anything, the spirit ever watchful crossed and repelled it. I was far from elevating myself or attributing to myself anything of this new state. My experience made me sensible of what I was. I hoped I should enjoy this happy state for some time, but little did I think my happiness so great and immutable as it was. If one may judge of a good by the trouble which precedes it, I leave mine to be judged of by the sorrows I had undergone before my attaining it. The Apostle Paul tells us that the sufferings of this life are not to be compared with the glory that is prepared for us. How true is that of this life? One day of this happiness was worth more than years of suffering. It was indeed at that time well worth all I had undergone, though it was then only dawning. An alacrity for doing good was restored to me greater than ever. It seemed to me all quite free and natural to me. At the beginning, this liberty was less extensive, but as I advanced, it grew greater. I had occasion to see Monsignor Bertaux for a few moments, and I told him I thought my state much changed. He, seemingly attentive to something else, answered, "No." I believed him because grace taught me to prefer the judgment of others and rather believe them than my own opinions or experience. This did not give me any kind of trouble. Every state seemed equally indifferent if I only had the favor of God. I felt a kind of beatitude every day increasing in me. I did all sorts of good without selfishness nor premeditation. Whenever a self-reflective thought was presented to my mind, it was instantly rejected, and as it were a curtain in the soul drawn before it. My imagination was kept so fixed that I had now very little trouble on that. I wondered at the clearness of my mind and the purity of my whole heart. I received a letter.